Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about stuff we're into right now.
Where do we start? Bethany, you have categories of stuff.
We're not really into much stuff these days.
Okay. This is a short podcast. The end.
And we're done. We're not into anything. No, I thought it could be fun to just talk about and like let our listeners know some of the things you guys are reading, what you're watching, what you're listening to. So we could go around the table and share those things.
These are the podcasts that people actually enjoy listening to, where we're not talking about some deep philosophical books. It's like, hey, what'd you think about The Mandalorian, Chris?
Makes us human. Oh, don't get me started. I know you didn't like it.
Who's going first? Who's launching us? Dusty, you're launching us.
I'm launching.
Dusty, what are you reading?
Things I'm reading. Right here in front of me currently is a book called Boundaries for Your Soul, which I do recommend. Sometimes I read a lot of stuff I don't recommend.
Right?
And not everything is a must read. Boundaries for Your Soul is a pretty helpful read. Also, Emotional Agility by Susan David. Don't recommend that one. I mean, it's helpful. There's some helpful nuggets, but it's not a must read. And it's an expensive book. So when books are expensive, they better be a must read.
Better be worth it.
Boundaries for Your Soul is really helpful because it's basically saying, it's helpful to me, Chris, in my line of work.
Yes.
Pastorally. It's basically saying all of your emotional world is helpful, and you can figure out how to use anger. You can figure out how to use fear, befriend those things so that they get sanctified by the Lord. And then they kind of, as my terms would be, stay in their lane. So it's basically another way of saying becoming a more robust, relationally and emotionally healthy person.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good book. Sounds like a helpful
thing. It's always a practical book. I probably should be reading a novel, you know?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Or
some poetry.
What I need to do is just pick a president or somebody like that and just dive headlong into that, because that's just how I roll. So I read books that are too practical.
That's good.
Are you watching anything fun?
Oh, you're just going to move to the next category. I like, you're just going to go right to.
Sorry.
Let's do Dusty White. What do you want?
I'm showing all my cards here. You're not going to be surprised by this at all. But JC and I are currently rewatching Parenthood, which, by the way, is also really practical for me.
Because you have some kids.
Yeah.
You have a few
kids. I would say that like watching movies is my wife's love language. So usually when I'm doing that, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll quit doing other things, projects and reading and stuff like that, to sit on the couch and be unproductive. So it's really good for me.
What season of Parenthood are you on?
I think we're in 4.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay.
And also I just really want to live on a boat.
Yeah.
You know, I really just live.
I've never watched a single episode of Parenthood.
Yeah.
Never.
Well, that's how I am with The Office.
And really? Then, You've never watched an episode?
Okay, like, so to be fair, probably a full episode once.
I like it.
But now I also never watched The Titanic.
Yeah, you shouldn't have.
All right, I just said The.
The Titanic.
And that's how people know I haven't watched it.
The Titanic ship.
And then eventually it gets to that point where you're like, well, I'm not going to watch it now.
Yeah, because you have a reputation of not watching.
Yeah,
you
the same is true with The Office.
I respect that.
You don't get any of our office humor, though.
Well, that's how pervasive The Office is. I actually do know the humor. You don't even have to watch it. It's like Titanic. You didn't have to watch it to know the storyline.
To know the ship sank at the end?
Yeah. The ship sank.
Spoiler alert. The ship sinks. Well, Chris, now it's your turn.
So we're just going around the room.
I guess.
I'm sorry. I was trying to tie it into, he's reading so much practical stuff and he needs to read a novel. Maybe you're watching something. Sorry.
No.
I ruined the flow.
Okay. Send me the novels,
people. I changed the flow. Reading. So coming out of the last Gospel Coalition Omaha meeting, I read Gentle and Lowly, is a phenomenal book.
Despite what some reviews say,
I highly recommend that book. And then another, I'm reading things sort of related.
He's on our next podcast.
Perfect.
It's listeners will hear Dane Ortlund in his own words describing why he wrote Gentle and Lowly.
Did you have to wait till the TGC gathering to read Gentle and Lowly?
No, I purposely waited so I could get a free copy.
Wow.
That's smart.
Because I'm cheap like that.
That's just good practical leadership.
I was going to buy it, and then I saw the announcement, he's coming, free copies. I'm like, I'm going to wait. But blew through it pretty quickly. It's such a good book. And then I've been reading some things for both personal and for some ministry related stuff, related to masculinity. And so I just finished John Eldridge's book, Fathered by God. Again, another great book. You know, Eldridge has kind of a mixed, reputation within our tribe and
I haven't even heard his name for 20 years.
Yeah, I know it's been a while. I think the first time I read one of his books, I was like 22. So almost 20 years ago. But it was a good book in the sense it just kind of walks through the kind of the development of a man and some of these different stages. And, you know, sometimes his categories can be sound a little cheesy on the front end, but once he sort of explains what he means, super helpful. And then I'm reading another book with a kind of a silly title called Man Up by Jeff Hemmer, who is a Lutheran pastor. And again, a book on masculinity. It's very good. Really rich theologically, but also just
never read a Lutheran writing about masculinity. So that's a good category.
It is interesting because
that's not a crack on.
No.
Heard of a Lutheran writing a book on masculinity?
Yeah, I haven't read. Admittedly, I haven't read a lot of Lutherans kind of in this vein, like you're saying, Bob. And so when the Lutheran kind of very distinctive Lutheran language comes out, it's like, oh. That, you know, it's the way they talk about baptism kind of related to your identity and just some of the, how they talk about sanctification. Like that's a very Lutheran way to put it, but a great book again too. That's kind of where my space is.
What sent you on the masculine quest?
So largely centered around wanting to thinking through, men's discipleship at First City. And just wanting to think well about where are some gaps and how can we start to teach into that. And my, just personally, like as I was reflecting on, hey, what are some of the weaknesses and the brokenness of men and at First City? And I realized, oh, I share pretty much all of those. So I wanted to, you know, have the Lord work on me first in some ways. And we're going to do a men's breakfast in a few weeks, about a month, I guess. And so some of that reading is kind of prepping for that as well. So it's kind of both personal and pastoral.
And practical.
Practical. Absolutely. Yeah. See absolutely. That? Yes.
You're not reading any novels either.
I'm not. Not right now. but I do watch shows for fun.
Yeah. What are you watching?
I don't watch shows just practically.
What are you watching, Chris?
So we just finished the first season of All Creatures Great and Small, which you're not watching that show. You should watch that
what
show.
Is it?
It is. So, it's a British show, started in the BBC. They were showing on Masterpiece Theater on PBS, but the premise is, this young vet just out of veterinary school, and it takes place in the 1920s in this small town in England. And he joins this small little veterinary firm that's run by, a guy. And then he has a housemaid, and then his younger brother also lives there. And it's like this quirky dynamic. And then he just kind of cares for the animals of this small farming community. It is probably one of the most wholesome without being shallow shows you will find. It's like super unique in our world. Like it's not.
Is it a fan? You watch it with kids?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Nothing objectionable. And it's almost like shocking. You're like waiting for the objectionable thing to get in.
You're waiting for the.
And it's like the whole time. And it's what I've appreciated about the show is that it doesn't sacrifice depth of like character and like drama. And it doesn't have to dip into dark. And it's just the beauty of when you see a group of people who are for each other, despite the conflict and the drama and different things. At the end of the day, they're all for each other. And that's really beautiful and really profound. So, I think it's 6 episodes, maybe the first season is, 6 or 7 episodes. And, so highly recommend it. Something you can watch with your kids. I mean, it's got the animal drama, it's got the human drama. So watch that. Also finished WandaVision for all you Marvel nerds.
Too. I watched WandaVision.
What did you think of WandaVision?
My kids wanted to watch. I had no interest, but I watched. Yeah.
Did you like it better than The Mandalorian?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
The Mandalorian sucks.
Oh, man. Whoa. You just hate mail.
Come on, man. Yeah,
exactly.
The Mandalorian is not even worthy of being a Star Wars related story.
Oh, wow. If you could see me, listener, my head is blowing up right now. I'm like,
we can argue about that if you'd like. I just want to say I watched The Mandalorian.
Did you watch both seasons?
Of what?
Mandalorian.
I don't know. I probably watched parts of both seasons.
Did you come to the end of season two? You would have known if you come to the end of season two. Is it like, have we passed the, like, you can spoil?
No, you should. You can probably, because, you know.
Better not.
No spoilers.
Okay, I won't spoil it, but man,
because everyone's listening to the Wednesday conversation before they watch
The Mandalorian. Hey, don't spoil The Mandalorian for our listeners.
One time I used a sermon, back when This Is Us was in its first season, I used an illustration from the most recent episode before half the church has seen it, and I got a ton of flack for that, of like, you spoiled the episode for us. So I'm very sensitive to spoiling shows for people.
Literally, The Mandalorian just felt like, it felt like the writers just needed to pack 10 or 12 episodes. So I got an idea. On this episode, the spaceship flies to another planet, has a fight with someone, and then Baby Yoda and Mandalorian guy leave that planet and fly away. That's, and that's the episode. Point. Oh, cool. Man, they went to another planet and got in another fight with some people. Amazing. I was like, this is just so...
Episodic? It's supposed to be.
But in a way that's like, okay, really? I know exactly what's going to happen. Get to the point.
What did you think of WandaVision?
Really creative.
Yes, very creative.
And cool, because the way it started, you were like, where is this thing going? Like, it was one of those shows you were like, I have no idea where they're taking this, but I'm kind of intrigued. And it ended up being really interesting where it kind of all ended up. So yeah. I tease my kids. I'm like, I haven't seen the 72 Marvel movies, so I don't know
half of what's going on.
Hey, my kids were like giving me grief the whole time. They're like, you sound like grandpa. Like, who is this guy? What's it? You know, because I was asking all these questions. Like, wait, who's this guy?
Totally.
You know, and now my kids are like, well, don't be that guy. Your dad, you're such a loser. You haven't watched all these shows. And I'm like, look, I don't have 23 hours of my life to catch up on all the Marvel backstory so that I can watch WandaVision with intelligence. I have other things I need to be doing.
I'm too busy helping everybody who's watched too much TV.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. Wow. I'm sorry. This is all my vamping on WandaVision.
No. I asked you. I thought it was... Yeah, I thought it was super creative. I thought even thematically, some of like the core themes were pretty cool. And just the sense of, again, I hate trying to talk about without spoiling it if you haven't seen it yet, but it goes beyond just your typical bad guys threatening, good guys stopping them, that there was actually some depth of the character. And it does help if you've seen some of the movies to kind of know the emotional turmoil that is going on.
Like, if you know
at the center
who
of the
Vision
show
is, that really helps.
Yes.
Yeah. If you don't have any clue who Vision is, you're gonna
miss it all. Yeah.
Which is me.
It's very much a character driven, light on the action. The last couple episodes, it gets a little more Marvel-y, but it's very much character driven, slow development in some ways, but yeah, I liked it.
This is when I'm definitely not cultured right here. In this moment, I feel very vulnerable.
Listen, can I be honest with you about WandaVision, though? The action in the WandaVision world, the characters in there seemed really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The goofy FBI guys, I'm like, that feels campy to me. Like, those guys are bad actors. Yeah. Every scene that's like, we stepped outside Marvel World and there's some armored trucks driving up with FBI, it just feels like... Holy cow, this is 1960s Batman.
You know? Yeah.
So that's fair. Just felt very...
That's fair.
Different to me. Sorry.
Yes.
Let's keep talking about what you're watching.
But it is interesting that the one FBI agent, the good guy FBI agent...
Whoop.
That his character is entirely comic relief in Ant-Man. So to see him try to go serious was a little weird.
Yeah.
If you'd have seen Ant-Man, you would have known.
Well, I didn't.
Yeah. I'm disappointed, though. I'm going to need you to rewatch that or get on that list. Chris is watching a lot of stuff, so keep going, Chris. What do you got?
That was only two. Yeah, yeah.
I've recently read three things. One, Fleming Rutledge's book called The Crucifixion, which informed the preaching series that I'm doing right now on the crucifixion. It is one of the best books I've ever read, theologically speaking. It has, it's very theologically rich without being boring. And she's a fantastic writer. I don't know that I would agree with her in every place. I would say she's, there's a trajectory she's on that ends at universalism, and I don't love that. But man, she is so helpful at helping us think about the crucifixion. It was just one of those books that was very worshipful, very devotional, very, it was a slow read. It was a meditative read. It was just really rich. And very, theologically, full. Second book I'm reading, I'm not done with it yet. Diane Langberg's book, Redeeming Power. Mm. The subtitle is, something like Authority and Abuse in the Church. Right after the Ravi Zacharias thing happened, I saw somebody mention it on Twitter, and I was like, I need to grab that book and read it. And Diane Langberg is a fascinating author. She's a trauma counselor, has been for 40 or 50 years. She's an older woman who just has worked with trauma victims for her whole life. And so she just has such a rich life experience when it comes to trauma counseling, what people need to hear from the Lord and from his church when that's their story. And I don't know where the book ends yet. I haven't gotten to the end, but man, so far it's really helpful, especially for those of us who are in positions of ministry leadership. She just really helpfully frames out for us, hey, what are the places where power gets corrupted? What are church leaders specifically prone to? How do we create cultures where these kinds of things don't happen, and where we're creating a different kind of culture where the way we talk about and use and think about power is redeemed? So really, really a profoundly helpful book so far. And then finally, intern Travis gave me Herman Bavinck thing on the Kingdom of God. It's like an excerpt. What is it? You got it out of some reader.
Yeah. I think it seems like it's like a lecture that he gave sometime. Yeah,
he just gave me some photocopied Herman Bavinck thing.
Nice.
It's on the Kingdom of God, and it was just profound. So I told Travis, I was like, man, that's one of the best things I've ever read on the Kingdom of God. So
Travis, send it to me.
I'm going to make our whole team read it now.
Send it all. Yeah.
Look at that. Some Bavinck that Chris hasn't read yet.
I mean, there's a lot of Bavinck I haven't read yet, but yeah, that piece.
It's very, very good. So those are my three.
You're not any other than WandaVision. Are you watching anything?
Oh, yes. Two things. As candy, just escapism, just sheer escapism, no real redeeming just value, just sheer escapism. Am I watching Alias?
Oh, okay.
It's like a 20-year-old show.
I never watched it back then.
So my wife and I got into Alias. Some friend recommended it. I was like, oh, it's kind of, I like it. It's, you know, it's an old spy show. It's like very 24-ish. If you remember 24, it's like they're obviously from the same, era of American television or streaming video. But, so watching some of those, but recently my wife and I watched this documentary, One Child Nation, which is a documentary about China. And it's, we are obviously interested in that because our youngest daughter is adopted from China. And, it's a Chinese journalist who, was raised in the States, goes back to China and interacts with her whole family and acquaintances, about the Chinese government's one child policy, which began in 1979 and officially ended in 2015. And she just basically trying to do a documentary exploring the social costs of that policy. What did it create among the Chinese people? It's at the same time very sad and kind of traumatic, but also kind of profound in the ways that you begin to see how policy affects people's lives. So you have all these women who are forced into abortions and sterilizations. This is just massively across the whole country. You had communist officers who were responsible for being population control officers in various parts of the country. And she's interviewing all these people and saying, what was it like to be forced to have an abortion? What was it like to carry out this policy in such and such village? Obviously there's both sort of like traumatic moments, but then you also see just the helplessness of these communist officials that were just like, well, what was I supposed to do? Like, I've got authorities above me and I'm supposed to do my job. And this is the policy the government expects me to implement. And you just, you're on the horns of this moral dilemma of what would I do knowing that this policy is going to do damage to women and to families. And also knowing that I will lose my job and possibly be imprisoned if I don't implement it. It's just really, tragic. But also was really sort of, it made you sort of reflect and think. And then the really interesting thing is there, then she chronicles this whole human trafficking subculture that rose up because basically the way people got around the one child policy was to give birth to babies and then sell them to human traffickers who basically then sold them to orphanages. And then the orphanages would adopt them internationally. But it was like there was already three people being paid before the child arrives at the orphanage. So it's really challenging because you just realize like the ways that a universal policy like that creates all this ecosystem of greed and corruption and human carnage. And so obviously it had a real personal connection to our lives and to our story. But man, it was a kind of a hard documentary to watch, but also really made you step back and go, man, what governments do in the world and what societies do has a deep effect on people's lived experience. Mm-hmm. Wah, wah. What? not escapist like WandaVision. No. Moral and deep in its implications. Mm-hmm. Travis.
I'm reading. I started reading Dominion by Tom Holland.
Buddy, that's right.
Bob, I think did you say you read that on your sabbatical?
Yes,
or
I did.
And I'd heard that on a Bible project. They also talked about it. I'd heard Tom Holland interviewed by I think the Unbelievable podcast. And so I kind of was familiar with the idea of the book, which is pretty much that Western society and civilization is really shaped by Christianity, specifically our values are find their root in the belief of that every human is made in the image of God and that God came down to die on a cross and how that's really unique. And so like the fact that we believe people have value inherently and that we should actually, care for the oppressed and the widow and the orphan comes from Christianity, not from, anything else like philosophy or the Enlightenment. So I started reading that. It's really good. I'm not too far into it. I mostly got it because I knew that I'm like, this is probably a big enough idea that I just chew on and I think is so important enough that I should probably know the specifics about it and know specific examples. So going through that, I'm listening to Madeleine L'Engle's Walking on Water, which Madeleine L'Engle is the author of
Wrinkle in Time,
which she wrote this book in like, I think it's 1972. So it's pretty old, but it's basically a reflection. She's a Christian author.
Wow. Pretty old. Yep. He says,
oh. 72, baby,
man.
It was way back in 72. She's like her parents, she's saying were like 30 during World War I. And so I'm just like, oh wow, this is just a really a lot of it sounds like it could be written, 10 years ago. And so when I find out, that's in 72. It's just a reflection from a Christian author on like the importance of imagination, art, storytelling, which I just absolutely love. I eat that up as a guy that loves movies and storytelling.
And The Mandalorian.
I am a guy that loves The Mandalorian.
For no reason.
For no reason at all.
Because you get it. You exactly. Understand the depth of it.
Thank you.
The depth. Mindless repetitiveness.
The fact that goodness. You like Alias. I understand why you wouldn't get The Mandalorian.
Wow. That felt like fired. A shot. I'm sitting over here, but that felt like a shot over there. Hey, let me take.
Hang on, you guys. I got to take Baby Yoda to another planet real quick.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, Travis.
Guess what? Baby Yoda's in trouble, guys. We got to go break him out.
I haven't even seen this, but Baby Yoda has to be just a way to get your girlfriend into the Mandalorian.
Exactly. That's all it is.
Am I right?
Or your kid.
It's brilliant. It's working.
It's great marketing.
It's working.
Yep. Yeah. So that's what I'm kind of reading and listening to right now. But, recently I've been watching, Judas and the Black Messiah, which is neither about Judas nor our Messiah. It is nominated for some Oscars. It is about the assassination of Fred Hampton, who was the chairman of the Black Panther Party in Chicago in the 70s. He was a 21-year-old, really charismatic leader who was really good at bringing different groups together of different races, different like tribes of people, like the kind of impoverished like Southern people, teaming up with the Puerto Ricans, teaming up with the African Americans, bringing all these groups together. And it's the story of the FBI basically saying we need to take this guy out. That's where the term the Black Messiah comes in, is he's like being, they portray him as the Black Messiah.
Before Obama, you mean?
Exactly, before Obama. So this is the first time the story has ever been like told in a film or a movie before. The family never really gave the permission to use the story. And so finally they got the permission and worked with the family to tell this story. I found it really helpful for it from a historical perspective. It's just like a story that I'd never heard of. And it seemed pretty important that I kind of was like, why have I not heard of this before?
Well, I mean, it is from the 70s. So
it took place a long time ago.
And so that was mostly just interesting. And I always love to hear stories from different perspectives. And because that's the way that you connect with people from different groups and stuff is immersing yourself. I don't like hearing the stories that they tell. I've also finished watching the miniseries Chernobyl.
Oh yeah, you were talking about this the other day.
I did, Chernobyl.
I was actually alive when that happened, Travis.
Careful about how long ago.
That was actually in the 80s.
I watched the first episode of that and I had such a visceral reaction to it. I felt like I could not breathe watching it. I felt too afraid to take a deep breath.
What happened in the first episode that made you feel that way?
Because people are being poisoned nuclear.
Yeah. Felt very
dramatic. See their skin melting off.
People running around a radioactive nuclear facility with no protection because nobody told them that there was actually a nuclear explosion. They just said, hey, there's a fire. We should probably get the fire department to come.
Oh gosh.
And there's just people standing hundreds of feet from an open nuclear furnace just spraying water on it. And it's just like, your mouth is just open the whole time of like, what is going on? It's insane.
Bethany apparently was so traumatized. She didn't watch episode two.
She's done. I couldn't. I was like, I can't watch
this. Is not my show.
But on a more optimistic note, I also finished the series Ted Lasso. And
I've heard some good things about that.
I was going to say, I will be an advocate for this show till the day I die.
Is it as good as The Mandalorian?
It's very different from The Mandalorian. One disclaimer before I talk about it, it does have a lot of strong language.
So it's not a kid's show.
No, it's not something you're probably going to watch with your family, which is unfortunate. I wish that I didn't have as much so I could recommend it to more people and more people could watch it. But that is not the case. Basically, the show is about an American football coach who goes to England to be a soccer coach, even though he doesn't know anything about soccer. So it's pretty funny, but it's also just a really, really uplifting show about, I mean, the whole community and the team and the staff, like nobody thinks he should be there. And so it's kind of like him persevering through that and actually bringing the team together and the community together. It's so pure and like just wonderful how in an age, especially in the past year, where we're watching documentaries on Chinese human trafficking and Chernobyl and like just all this really heavy, depressing stuff. It is just not even escapist. It's just like fills you with hope of like, oh, this is what actually, there's also hope in this world of what like a hope-filled presence in a context where it's just absolutely cynical and there's just strife and tension and the transformative power that can have on a team and on a whole system. So it doesn't have a cynical bone in its body, which might annoy some people because sometimes you're like, okay, that's not actually what would happen. But also I don't think it's overly optimistic. It does a pretty good job of making you feel like, okay, I could see this guy actually existing and being a person and having this power, over people, like this really just kind, friendly, loving presence that just makes you smile and you know, this is just so good. Ted Lasso. Man, I love it so much. I recommend it to Bethany. Bethany, what did you think?
I loved it.
She loved it.
It was great. I kept waiting for it to turn dark, and it never did.
Is this like a serial show or just a movie? It's like episodes.
It's a serial show. Yep.
Okay. It's 10 episodes
like the Mandalorian.
So I got to go in for 10 episodes. Yep. This is I'm always evaluating like how long do I sign up for?
How much commitment is it going to take? Yeah. Yep.
So I'll think about it. I'll think about it.
Everything's episodes. Yeah. You know?
Well, it's the only way you keep people coming back and paying their subscription fee. Yeah,
that's right. You don't want to release too much too soon.
That's right. That's how the economic model works. Bethany, over to you.
So reading wise, I came across this writer a couple of years ago. Her name is Lori Ferguson Wilbert. And, she stuck out to me. She's a blogger. Her blogger is sayable.net. You can find her there. She just writes really thoughtfully and winsomely, I think I would say. She's like a total peacemaker. I think she said she's a 9 on the Enneagram, and she writes about a lot of different things, but mostly the things that I've kind of been drawn to. She writes a lot on suffering, on infertility, singleness, and more recently she's kind of written a little bit on, she has changed church denominations. So it's just been really interesting to kind of hear her.
From what to what did she say?
She was evangelical and now she's an Anglican.
Mm.
Yeah.
She's looking for some structure.
She is. But especially this last year, where I feel like there are blog posts and articles about just kind of like, you know, very polarized viewpoints. And she very gently always offers like a third way that I just am drawn to. And I just really like her. She's a great voice, I think, in the Christian, especially in the Christian Twitter sphere. Which is
ugly.
Nuts.
Yeah. You got to put a helmet on out there.
Yeah. It's not great. So, but yeah, so I've been reading a lot of her. I've been listening to Barack Obama's memoir, A Promised Land. I got it to read and I got like 150 pages in trying to read it. And I was like, if I'm going to finish this book, I'm going to need to listen to it because it was just taking me. It was a slog for me.
Is it him reading it?
It is him reading
it. There you go.
He's got a good voice.
You can listen. Yes. You can listen to him.
Yeah.
He's got a good voice.
Yeah. That's been really interesting and kind of fun to listen to.
I don't think George W. Bush could have narrated his memoir. That would have been
I would have listened to it.
It would have, I mean, it would have been speak. Entertaining, but.
Hey, wait, didn't Obama write another memoir too? This is like a second or third one, right?
Yes. Yes. So, he's written a lot because he had Audacity of Hope.
Yeah, this is my knock on him. Is like, wait, another memoir?
Well,
because you've lived another 10 years.
Yeah. This is volume one of his presidential memoir. Oh. And dude is very long-winded. And he admits that.
But there's probably interesting stuff in a presidential memoir.
He's gonna write a second volume?
Oh, yeah. This first one is 700 pages.
Wait, is that?
Is he normal?
Hey, guys, I'm going to write volume one of my church planting memoir, and I'll let you know whether there's a volume two coming or not.
Yeah.
Wow.
In 5 years.
Depends on how much.
In 5 years.
I mean, sorry, the cynical side of me is like, hey, whatever you think about his presidency, is he aside? That seems a little like high on your horse. Mine deserves two volumes.
So this is the interesting thing.
What's Winston Churchill, though, like 12 volumes or something? I mean, you know, it's statesmen kind of have this. Yeah. I have a lot to tell.
But he did kind of save a country.
Yeah. He says in the beginning, he's like, I know I'm long-winded. And he, I also found it really interesting. He said that he wrote this long form, like he wrote it on a legal pad.
That's with his amazing.
Hand. And I'm just like, ooh, my hand hurts thinking about that.
Dude was a lawyer though, you know?
Gosh, that's amazing.
But,
dude was a lawyer.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting to listen to.
I like how your listen to is also a read.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate that. Travis, you said this earlier and now you're saying it. Sometimes people say, well, yeah, I'm reading and they're listening. You know,
which
you're,
is you're that clarifying. What do you
it's
think?
Like when people say I talked to so and so and you mean you texted them.
Yeah.
You didn't actually use your vocal cords.
But once I'm done with this book, do I get to say that I've read it?
Well, you did read the first 150 pages, so I'm going to give you a pass.
I tried to read it. And then what I'm watching, I watched a couple weeks ago, I watched a movie that's nominated for an Oscar called The Sound of Metal. And it is about a drummer in a metal band who loses his hearing. And I did not expect to like it as much as I did. I think I kind of went into it just like, oh, I'll watch this because there's
You're married Oscar to a
buzz.
Drummer.
Yeah, I'm married to a drummer. There's Oscar buzz around it, whatever. And I loved it so much. It's a great storytelling. Also very, I think I'm a very sensitive person. So when movies play with, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, but so he loses his hearing and they kind of like simulate that in the movie is you hear what he's hearing, which is muffled talking. And it freaked me out because I was just like, I could not imagine going most of my life hearing and then to lose that sense is
that happened in crazy. That happened in Creed where the girl's losing her hearing in Creed and they give you this like piercing sound and you're like, oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a great story. So this guy goes and learns sign language and, it's just a really, really good story. And yeah.
Does it have like a heavy metal soundtrack?
I don't think I'm like, well, what is the soundtrack? It's mostly silence.
Oh yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
It's not really about the music.
But there are some heavy metal songs at the beginning, but yeah, it was a great movie. I highly recommend it.
Chris is a closet speaking metal of, guy.
I'm a closet metal guy. Speaking of movies with silence, any of you guys see A Quiet Place?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That was an incredible movie.
Wow.
Yes. Did you like that one, Bob?
Uh-huh.
That's a good movie. Uh-huh. That's really good. The second one is supposed to come out at some point.
Yeah. Volume 2.
Volume 2. Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for going around the table. This is actually really, I always end up with a new list of books and occasionally something to watch if I'm willing to make the investment, which remains to be seen. But thanks everyone for your contributions. Listeners, text or email us and let us know, hey, what do you want to hear us talk about that's bantery like this? Not your worldview topic or your question about the church or Christianity, but hey, what do you want to know about Dusty White's life? What
he,
what he does in his off time, etc. And it's always fun every once in a while to just have some fun and talk about these things. So thanks for joining us for this episode.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.